The It's Time for Coffee podcast is powered by the Converge Podcast Network. Welcome to It's Time for Coffee. I'm Jeanette Tapley, your host and internet bestie. Here on It's Time for Coffee, we will help each other find joy, sisterhood, and lasting friendship. We are all about Bible-based love and teachings to help us grow into the friends we long to be and to nourish the relationships that we already have. Now, I'm not a theologian or a Bible scholar. I'm just your pal, Jeanette, here to help you and encourage you. Join me each week as we sit down with a friend to be encouraged and reminded that we are heard, valued, and never alone, no matter what season we find ourselves in. So grab your cup, fill it up, because friend, it's time for coffee. Hey, I am so glad that you are back for another episode of It's Time for Coffee. Today, we are sitting down with new friends, Dr. Josh and Christy Straub. They are here to talk all about their new book, Famous at Home, which is 7 decisions to put your family center stage in a world competing for your time, attention, and identity. Y'all, our conversation was so good, and we talked a lot about emotional intelligence and seeking affirmation outside of our houses versus seeking it inside our house. We talked a lot about our identity and seeking first our identity in God and who He created to be so that we can live with an overflow of abundance and fullness in our lives. It's a conversation I know you're not going to want to miss. So friend, grab your cup, fill it up with whatever you want, and let's dive in. Hey y'all, I'm so excited. I'm sitting down with Dr. Josh and Christy Straub, and we are talking about their new book, Famous at Home. And I am so excited about this conversation. It's fun to talk to other podcasters, and it's fun to talk to authors and learn what God is doing in their hearts. So you guys, hi, welcome to It's Time for Coffee.
Hi, thanks for having us. We're so excited to be here.
Yes, we are very excited. Thanks for
having us. And we have our coffee cup.
Oh, good. Okay, tell me, what's in your coffee? Like, what's in your cups?
Okay, this is going to sound really disappointing on my end because I did have coffee. But now I can only like do one a day now. So this is like hot water with lemon because that I've been told is what is good for me to clear out inflammation, all the things.
Yeah.
Decaf. I drink one cup a day as well, but I have decaf right now. So simple.
Okay. Simple. Okay. I like that. I've heard that the lemon water is really good, but I would do it different. I would do lemon water first and then a cup of coffee.
Okay. So I did that. First thing in the morning, I do hot lemon water, and then I did coffee because I need, like, we got the kids out, you know, and we're like, yeah. And then I need an extra shot. And then now if I did another coffee, that would be too much.
For sure.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I probably should switch to decaf at some point, but at the same time, this is my second cup. And we have an espresso machine. And so I'm on my fourth shot of espresso. So I'll be done after this.
And then you'll be like levitating. Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I always do these on interview days, like and then I'm like talking really fast or like jittering. And that's, you know, makes for good audio. It really does.
Totally. I'm like so excited.
You don't have to put you on 1.5 or 2 times, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm always on it. Yeah. Okay. Can you guys tell us just a little bit about you, what you guys do, and what your like heart is all about?
Yeah. So we have an organization called Famous at Home. And, you know, our heart is to really help us see where our identity is at. You know, so many of us are chasing. And, you know, I mean, we started by really honing in on kids. Like our heart is for the next generation. That's where our heart is at. But as I started doing research over the last number of years, I started to realize that our kids become who we are. Like all of the research on parenting can be summed up into one primary conclusion, and that's that our kids become who we are. And so, you know, it really starts with us as parents in the house. So Famous at Home, one of the big things that we really started to find out and realize was that marriages were in trouble. People were struggling because their identity was they were chasing things outside the home. And so families get the leftovers. And when families get the leftovers, there's usually something out of line that's not ordered correctly in the person's heart and in the person's life. And the kids and the spouse usually get, you know, what's left over. And that's not fair. And so we found through the years that the more that we focused in on parents, the more we focused in on marriages, the more we focused in on the adult, it really was the structure that just had a trickle-down effect into the entire home. And so that's really where Famous at Home comes from. It comes from the idea that when we're famous at home, we can thrive on our stage, no matter what our stage is, no matter what we're called to. And the research shows this over and over and over again, that if you pay attention to what, you know, ministry number one, priority number one, which is your marriage and your kids, you show up differently on your stage. You are more present, you are more focused, and you can thrive there too. So that's really what this whole idea of being famous home is all about and how we got started.
I think that's awesome. And I love that you say marriage first and then kids second, because we always tell our kids that, like, hey, this marriage has to last longer than you're at home. Like, mm-hmm. we will stay together, you will leave us. Yeah. And that's just the way it is. What has changed in the last, like, two decades? Because I know that, like, divorce numbers have skyrocketed since we were kids and all of that. So what's changing? And I want to know if you think it's this desire to be famous on a platform. Like, as social media grows, we all want to be the biggest, mm-hmm. or maybe not, we don't all want to that, but you know what I mean? Like, we all mm-hmm. we are seeking approval outside of our homes. So is it just the social media age that's changed us? What's changed us in the last couple decades?
I think it's made it more visible, right? I think the chase has always been there. And I think the desire to be important somewhere, like, I want to matter. And even think as parents, like, we're raising our kids with in the back of our heads thinking, like, we want them to succeed at something. Like, we want them, whatever that field is, if they become veterinarians or entrepreneurs or whatever it is, we just want you to rise to the top of whatever field you choose. And we've emphasized this public approval that when someone else outside of the home tells you, like, good job, you're crushing it, and gives you medals and honors and promotions and all the different ways that we award ourselves, right? And award one another, it feels good. And yet within the home, there's no awards. Like, nobody, like, I have never had Josh come home and awarded him a plaque. Like, you are the most present dad. I am so grateful for you.
You could do that, though.
I could. But, we don't think to do this, right? And so we do naturally start to seek approval somewhere. Like, we just want to have someone look us in the eye and say, you are doing such a good job. And what you're doing matters. Like, it's so valuable. But we're told that there's all these different metrics of monitoring, like, money, finance, accomplishment, whatever. It's you did so great, and your boss tells you you did so great. And I do think social media makes it so much more visible, even outside the work environment. Now it's like, do I matter in society? Like, do I have a platform? And I'm like, in air quotes, you know, like, what does that even mean? But it is significant in our day and age. It's something that is new in the last, you know, two decades that, you know, our parents didn't struggle with, and it will be different even for our own kids as they're coming out. I mean, there will be different ways.
And I think too, you know, even if you go back 100 years, you know, in Western culture, Western society, the Industrial Revolution is where this really got started, you know, because in all other cultures throughout history, it was more of a collectivistic, community-based culture. We are more individualistic. Since the Industrial Revolution, that's when schools started sending kids to, this gets on a whole other topic, but it's when kids started going to school in separated grades. It's when, you know, churches started separating people. You know, dads left the home, mom stayed home. I mean, this is generally speaking, but mom stayed home. She was the primary person to be at home. Dad's out, you know, crushing, you know, quote unquote, crushing it, doing whatever he needs to do at work, but it left mom at home. And now mom's got this double-edged, you know, struggle with, like, I need to matter, or I feel like I need to matter somewhere, but, you know, raising kids. Whereas before, fathers and mothers raised the family together. It was very multi-generational. It was very collectivistic. It was very community-oriented. Mm-hmm. And so social media has only further intensified the individual and put the individual on a platform. And when we are not feeling good about ourselves, this is what leads to the chase. When we're not feeling good about ourselves, we have our own hurt and pain from our past. We start to try to find ways to heal that pain, find significance, get a dopamine bump. And as Christy was saying, when your dopamine, when you're getting accolades from board members or employees or from clients or you know, people, you know, stakeholders in your business, wherever it is, when you're getting those or fans, you know, on from a stage, if you're getting those type of accolades and you come home, you're not getting the same dopamine bump in your brain playing chutes and ladders with somebody who has no idea which way is up and which way is down. Like, it's just like, hey, dad, will you play dolls with me? Hey, dad, will you play chutes? It's kind of like, you know, it's just a very different mental shift to sit down and do something with our kids that gives us a dopamine bump. And I think we have to pay attention to what are we chasing?
I love that. And I think that that is a really like that, that question can be asked in everything. What are we chasing? Yeah. What are we chasing in motherhood? What are we chasing outside the home? And I think that to me, I see a lot of affairs happen that way. What are we chasing when somebody else is telling you that you're doing a good job and that feels good? Mm-hmm. And your husband's just like, yeah, you made dinner tonight. Like, good job. Like,
right.
You, that's, yeah. And honestly, if he says good job. Right? Like, we're literally right. At the point. We don't even say that.
Like, it's expected. It's like, I just expect it.
Yes.
We don't even acknowledge our each other's contribution, nor our own. Like, we've just become.
Right.
And also, too, a lot of the reason that Famous at Home became Famous at Home and what we're doing is because we would get phone calls. The most often phone call I got was from pastors, ministry leaders, entrepreneurs, business owners, people who have a following of some type, where there was an affair, a moral or ethical failure of some type. Maybe it wasn't an affair, but it was, they crashed and burned. And it was saying, hey, can you help us put the pieces back together? And the family was the one getting the leftovers every single time.
Yeah.
And they knew that that was part of putting pieces back together. And our heart was to say, how do we prevent this from happening? How do we really begin to cultivate the heart of the leader, cultivate the heart of the parent in a way that this doesn't go down this road? And that's where Famous at Home came from. And that's where a lot of the coaching strategies that we have implemented through the years and where this book was birthed out of.
Yeah. So I guess that's like the first question is when we find ourselves seeking affirmation outside of our home, what is the first thing that we can do to stop, halt, and turn back to our houses?
That's a great question. And I think, I think the very first part of this, and I'm trying because it's such a great question. And I think the very first thing is different for everybody. Mm-hmm. I think it's unique to your situation, but I genuinely believe we have to pay attention to where we've placed our identity and begin to seek forgiveness for where we have placed our priorities that we shouldn't have. And, you know, I mean, I'll just be honest with you. Even this weekend, I was with our kids and, you know, our oldest son was just showing some behavior stuff that, I was trying to help him and help him to see where his attitude was, you know, just poor attitude, lack of teachability. And I just said to him, I said, buddy, can I just tell you something? I'm really sorry that I wasn't paying attention to this sooner, that I should have done a better job. And in my mind and my heart, I've been distracted and I really want to help you succeed. And I haven't done a good job as a dad of that. And so I'm going to really make it a priority to start paying attention to where I can help you just see your attitude and help you be teachable in certain areas that are going to really help you in life. And I started that way by just saying, I've got to apologize. And I think that first step really comes down to what do we have to reprioritize, and then seeking forgiveness of our loved ones and of God to go, I need to repent and I need to make a change here.
Yeah, I think that's good. I always joke, but it's very sincere, that my kids will know how to apologize, because that's one thing that I have practiced many times, like, hey, I lost my temper, or hey, I shouldn't have said that, you know, just those kind of things. So hopefully they'll just be really, really good apologizers.
Well,
and hopefully they'll learn that they don't have to apologize as much.
Well, and hey, listen, too, we wrote this in the book. John Gottman found that he talks about emotion coaching. Like, we talk about emotional intelligence a lot with our kids. And he said parents, he found in his research in emotion coaching that if you just get it right 40% of the time, you can still get the outcomes you desire in your kids. Like, you only have to do good 40% of the time. And the reason is because the research shows that there's a word called repair, and it is the buffer. It is the ultimate of relationships. What does the Bible call it? Forgiveness. And so when you mess up, because you will, you seek the forgiveness of your kids, and that is the buffer. So you're getting it right. Like, you're crushing it, Jenna. Like, it's like.
Thanks. Follow me for more parenting advice.
Yes, right? Expert. She's the expert. And I think so
my
much
my kids
of
will
that...
tell you I am not famous at home for this.
But you, like, I think that's a problem too, is people can even hear that and all they perceive is shame, right? Mm-hmm. I have someone who, you know, she's like, I feel like I'm trying, but just that mantra or that, like, it feels, yeah. I just perceive shame. And I think that's exactly what the enemy wants, is yeah. as long as you feel ashamed, you're going to retreat and pull away. And so it's like, you know, the wives nudging their husbands, like, yeah, you get, I really need you to read this, or like, I really need you to lean into mm-hmm. this. I totally understand the heart. Like, they see this need, and yet it's communicating to the husband, you already, or the wife, like vice versa. Right.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
for me, I mean, we can talk about me, talk about seeking for identity. Like, I'm looking for identity in anything. Like, I'm looking for identity. I was a stay-at-home mom. It wasn't natural to me. I was struggling. I feel like everyone around me was just eased into the role. And I was grateful to be able to be at home with my kids, and then also covered in shame that I didn't appreciate it, nor did I honestly, like, I wanted to go do something that mattered. I did. Like, I wanted to do something where I was standing in purpose. And not that that is bad. Like, we need to be walking fully in the purposes that God has for us. That is within our home and outside of our home. We are called to both, I fully believe. But I was looking for someone to tell me that I mattered. And so the shame, I think, that covers me is then, like, I can't even enter into this because I already suck. I'm already failing. And the whole point, I think, is like, God is looking us like square in the eyes and saying, daughter, like, you already are. You are famous at home. You are, to your husband and to your kids, the most important woman in their lives. Everything you say matters. The weight of everything you do matters. Like, we're trying to matter somewhere else. This is the one place that you talk about. If you look at the death of a spouse or a parent, you look at what that impact leaves on a child or on the spouse that's left. Like, that shows you just a glimpse of the magnitude of the role you play in that family. You are irreplaceable. You cannot be replaced. And if we start to just see it in those lenses, like, I am, and now I get to just fine tune how I show up with them because I realize how much I matter and how much they matter to me.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that there's just so much focus on, like, well, I lost my identity, so I have to go find it somewhere else. And it's like, well, what if you just, like, stopped searching for it and actually, like, placed your identity in the one who gave it to you, like, into who you are created to be? Then we would have so many less, that doesn't really make sense, but we'd have fewer moms, I don't know, seeking this self-fulfillment stuff that just isn't going to fulfill you for long. It's going to fulfill you while you read that book and how it makes you feel. But then when we seek it with the people, I don't know, there's just something about serving your family out of the abundance of, like, who God created you to be. And it, like, that's very, very churchy language and very, very, like, easier said than done. Mm-hmm. But it's like, man, when I serve my family out of, like, the abundance of, like, I'm good at my job. Mm-hmm. I love what I do, and I get to make dinner for you guys tonight and sit down at the table and just be. Yeah. It's a really sweet thing. It's a sweet time.
Well, and it's, you seeing, like you're saying, it's the fullness of life. That's what we're called to. Yeah. He came to give us fullness of life. Yeah. We are so used to just pushing and driving. And we were talking about this the other days, like the American terms, or North American terms, I'm Canadian, so I can say that, you know, for success are so violent. It's like, we're crushing it. We're like, it's so aggressive and violent. And we push so hard in this one lane. And God is like, I believe, saying, I have called you to such a fuller life. Like, stop focusing everything into, it almost sounds like we're decimating this one lane. And how about we fill up the beauty in the whole spectrum of life that I have given you? And when we start to live into that fullness, everything changes. Because even that one lane that we're called to, maybe out in the workplace or out into society, it's not, you're not pushing so much as you are just being propelled, because you are full. Mm. There is a fullness in you.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. I think that's really, really well said. And I think that it, yeah, it's out of an abundance. Mm-hmm. What does it look like to live this out? So I think, I can't remember who said the quote, but there's a quote that was like, we've been married for like 50 years or something like that, but I haven't been married to the same person the whole time. Like you change that much every couple of years, or every 7 years or something like that. And we've been married, Jesse will laugh at me as he edits this, cause I never remember. I think we've been together 18 years.
This is great.
Girl, I am you. Josh knows, like, he'll be like, remember in August of 1999? I'm like, no, I don't. I don't remember what I did yesterday. So I will look at him and I'll be like, how many years have we been married? Or I'll say, how many times have I asked you how old you are?
You don't even know how old you are.
I never know how old I am. I always have to ask.
I know how old I am based on our oldest. I am 20 years older than him. I was 20 when I had him. So I'm always like, Ezekiel, how old are you? And he's like, I'm 15. I'm like, 35. Got it.
35. Got it.
So, and I always say like, we've been married. I think we've been married for 17 years. I could be totally wrong, but we are working on 18.
Yeah.
And he's like, stop saying it that way. He's like, we're not working. He's like, 17. So he will absolutely, as he's cutting this part out,
exactly. He'll be like, and we're going to eliminate all that.
Hope he keeps it in. But so we have been married for X amount of years, 17 years, and we have changed so much. Our marriage has changed so much. Every season of raising kids is different, and every season of marriage that involve those kids is different. So how can we really work? And I don't want to say strive, because I don't feel like we're striving to get this, but how can we like implement this famous at home method where we're seeking our spouse and we're seeking like the fullness of our families in every season of marriage that we face?
So good. Yeah. I love that quote. I think it's Ernest Smeeds that talks about that. He's an old theologian who talks about this idea that you're always different. And I think we have to pay attention to that, even as we talk about how do we start showing up well for our family. And I think, so I want to just make sure that we identify, it all starts with your identity in Christ. Like we've got to develop our identity in Christ, because you will. So the first thing that we talk about is changing your mindset, or the idea of showing up as the best version of you. So showing up as the best version of you for your kids and your family, but that has to flow out of our identity. And that's an ongoing process. I know for me, and we try to keep it as simple as possible for family. So for example, like, you know, what is your, identify your biggest pain point. Identify, is it your marriage? Is it with your kids? What are you laying in bed at night worried about? What is processing when you're awake at night? What is it related to your family that you are worried about? Is it your marriage? Is it your kids? Is it a particular child? What is it that you're worried about? And then think about how you can begin to show up as the best version of you for that particular child, for your spouse, or whatever that looks like. So, and this plays itself out in a couple of different ways. You know, for me, that looked like I'm a very different human when I get up first thing in the morning before anybody is out of bed, and I work out or I spend time with God. Like I have to start my day with my identity. And even that's shifting. Like for a while working out, I have seasons where working out early at 5 or 5:30 is so important to me in showing up. But lately I've been just spending time with the Lord and getting my identity and then working out later. And so, but for me, one of the biggest ways that I did this was when I work out in the morning and I get that alone time without kids, without Christy, without anybody, by the time they're awake, I feel like I have completed, like I have taken care of myself. I can show up happy. I can show up seeing them as opposed to worried about me. Well, I'm running behind. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough this or that. Like, so for me, it's, and I just encourage you, find one shift you can make to begin to show, because this can sound so big and it can sound so overwhelming. And you're like, I don't even know where to begin, because, you know, I feel like things are a wreck. And don't think about that. It's just a 2-degree shift. Like, what is the mm-hmm. one way right now? You know, there was a season also too, where my best showing up as the best version of myself for my kids was, I'm going to say yes to them at least twice a day. So, you know, this was during the pandemic. This was like 2020. And I remember a lot of my speaking engagements were over computer, and it was a particular day that we have in our schedule that's called Tough Tuesday. It's like a day where we just plan as much as we can on a Tuesday. I had not really seen the kids that much. And it's like 10 till 6. I am getting ready to go live in 10 minutes on this speaking engagement. I have the Ring camera set up. I got my computer set up. I mean, where I'm all ready to go. I'm sitting in the stool I'm in right now. And our daughter comes in and she said, Daddy, she said, can we play Uno when you're done? And I was like, oh, I knew by the time I was done, she's going to be in bed. And I looked at her. I was already prepped. Everything was ready to go. I had 10 minutes. And I looked at her and I said, can we play right now for 10 minutes? And so we ran up. She said, yes. And so I said yes to her to play Uno. It was the best 10 minutes of my day. We ran to the top of the steps. I can tell you where we were at playing Uno. Like, it was like I was just going to say yes. And it started changing my relationship with my kids and seeing them smile differently. And so simplifying it into one way that you can just show up as the best version of you, connected to that problem that you're worried about at night.
Yeah. And I love that the problems that we're worried about at night change as husbands and as wives. Because my husband will be like, I just don't know how our kids are going to survive in the wild. Like, I don't know how they're going to go to like grow up. I'm like, I don't know what's for dinner tomorrow. Or I don't know how I'm going to get kid A to place B to like, how do I have enough time to carpool everybody in our family? So our problems are very different. And
you're
as we come together as spouses,
you're speaking our world.
I was have gone. You been paying
Did we become best friends?
I was gone this weekend and I come upstairs. There is a BB gun with shells like sitting up in our bedroom. And my son was like, well, Dad, they were shooting turkey vultures outside out the window.
Well, we didn't. I mean.
Oh, you didn't?
There was one out there and we were just shooting BBs into the field at that
anyway,
point.
And,
so.
And our son's like, well, Dad said, like, this is the kind of thing we can do when Mom's not home. Like, perfect. But those are the things. He wants his son to know how to shoot turkey vultures out the top floor windows. Like, cool. That wasn't on my radar of important things to instill in our children, but I see the benefit.
And
That's
we weren't
cool.
going to kill them. It was just a BB gun.
Just scare them off. Yeah. Sure. Okay, cool. You don't need to even justify it. I hate them. They don't need to be here. Anyway. And I think too, like to dial it in, like it's just one goal. Like we do this leader's heart and it's, I do it with the women and we do this year long,
It's cohort.
I'm like lacking for words, for leaders. And so when we talk about this, like, especially those of us who are driven, you know, maybe more type A, like we have a lot of goals. We have a lot of things. So it does get very overwhelming because I'm like, I want to change this. I want this to be better. I want to be doing this. And we just get focus on the one thing, the first thing. And everything starts to shift after we start addressing one thing, because I think we're so crippled from even starting by the overwhelm of all the things, especially when it comes to a family, which is all relationships. And relationships will not change overnight. They cannot change by you deciding to do one thing at one time. It's over time. We say it like what is the line?
I don't know what your line you're talking about.
A decade in the making.
An overnight success?
Yeah, that one. An overnight success, a decade in the making. And that's what we are. Like one day we're going to look at our kids and we're going to be like, you are awesome. And I pray one day and we look at our spouses and we're 50 years in. We're like, we are awesome.
Yeah, it's like.
That
phrase comes out of like the music industry where, you know, someone rises to the top really quick. But the reality is they've been busting their tails for 10, 20 years.
In obscurity.
In obscurity. And now all of a sudden they're crushing it and everybody sees them crushing it. And it's like, no, you've done the work. You're behind the scenes. You've been doing the work. And that's really what that's about. Yeah.
I love that. And it is so true, because there's nobody sees until it's glamorous. And that's, I hope that, you know, we're putting in the work with our kids that one day they will be as glamorous as I think that they can be.
Amen. Speak it into them. That's it. Like, otherwise, because we see it one way or the other, right? Like, we either see it explode in a dramatic, you know, like a family falling apart and it's in divorce, or we see it like, but I think we have to realize, like, we're all headed somewhere. Like, the choices that we're making this day, this very day, like, it's moving us into a path. And that's not to scare us or like be all dramatic. Yeah. It's just the truth. And so the more we're conscious, and I think surrounding ourselves with people who live similarly, like, that's also really important.
Yeah.
Because if you're not having other dads or moms or, you know, that are speaking into your life, that are saying, like, if they're telling you, oh yeah, go chase your dreams, girl, like, go girl, go do it. And beautiful. Like, thank you for cheering me on. Are you cheering me on at home too? Are you checking in? Like, how are you? Like, how are you and Josh? How are the kids? Like, how are you? Like, do you feel like you connect with your kids' hearts right now? Because that's ultimately, I think, the prize. And yet it's, I just had a friend text me this morning, parenting is so hard. It is. It is.
Yeah.
And it, and yet it's like, this is the long game, and we have to have people that are cheering us on through the long game in order to persevere.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network and is sponsored in part by
Hey, I want to break in real quick and tell you about two really exciting things. Number one, did you know or see that I started another podcast? This new podcast is called Moms at Work, and it is for the working mom that works inside and outside her home. It is for all moms, honestly, and it's just for us to have this conversation of breaking down expectations and shaking off guilt and all of these things. I'm going to give you tips and tools that I use in my own life as I work, and we're going to have guests that come on. These episodes are going to be short and sweet, 15 to 20 minutes max. If we have a guest, it'll most likely be broken into two episodes, because really, as working moms, we don't have a ton of time, and I want this to be really, really digestible. So you can find Moms at Work with Jeanette Tapley on any and every podcast player, and I would love for you to leave it a rating, review, and go ahead and follow it, because, I mean, you're here with me now, so you're going to want to be with me over there. Trust me. The last couple of years, I was very, very focused on internet friends and how I could be a good internet friend, or how I could make internet friends and all this. And then I had a pretty big falling out in a friendship and pulled back because internet friends hurt me. So I will no longer have internet friends, which is a fun thing to do when you're a podcaster who talks about friendship and internet friends. So it was a very off cycle thing to be walking through. But that fear forced me to replant my friendships in front of my face and to run to my best friend, who, number one, is Jesus, number two, is my husband, and to really reconnect and pour in. And my ministry is so much more, it's growing in a different way than it was before, because I'm planted in the soil that is right in front of me, and my friendships here are growing, and my relationships are just, it's a beautiful thing. I was using too many, like, flourishing and blossoming and blah, blah, blah.
This is like where Josh checks out, and I'm like, ooh, yes, tell me.
Yeah.
Use all the words.
Growing.
You can use them with me.
And so I was like, oh, this is really cool that, like, I actually have people in my life who are pouring in and I am pouring out. And it's awesome. And I think it is because I was working on being famous on another platform. I wasn't working at being loved and known in my community and being famous in my home.
So good. That'll preach.
Tell me this. What season of your marriage do you wish you guys would have had this book?
So, I mean, for me, that would have been right after we had our first two kids. So our first two kids were incredible. And we write about this. I mean, it was a very difficult season for us. Christy describes it as hitting the bottom rung of life, and I can let her share that. And one of the big things that we talk about in the book, and one of the foundations, which we haven't talked about, that we anchor everything that we do on, and I wrote a previous book about this on emotional safety in kids, is that idea of emotional safety, really being able to mm-hmm. identify your emotions. What is it that you're feeling? What is it that you're experiencing underneath? Because our emotions, it's through our emotions, I believe, that God speaks to us. I believe it's through our emotions that we enter into the heart of our spouse. So, you know, when the Bible says to guard your heart, it is the wellspring of life. When you get married, you become one flesh. We have one marital heart. And if I'm not pursuing Christy's heart and fighting for her heart, then what I'm doing is I'm fighting for my own. And there's a wall that's built between us. So I have to guard her heart as much as I'm guarding my own in order for our marriage to be connected. And we do that through emotion. And one of the biggest things that turned us around was learning how to talk about emotion during those difficult seasons. I can let you talk about that and share your story. But I realized that I went to a leadership retreat with a dear friend and mentor of mine, Dr. John Townsend. And he talked about how emotions were, being able to talk about emotion, label emotion, was the core for success for so many leaders. And for me, I was going, if I'm going to be a leader, I've got to lead at home. I got to take this stuff to my home, and I got to start talking about emotion to Christy. And so we implemented this thing called 15 minutes a day with each other. And we started doing that, you know, back then. But I wish we would have had this in that season, because that season was our most difficult.
Oh, yeah. I just remember, like, Josh was going out doing all these things. I always say, like, I just felt left behind. Like, I was just left. Mm. And I remember one time he came home through the door, and I'm feeding our son. Like, I was, you know, he was learning how to eat solid foods. So it was pureed bananas and sweet potatoes at the time. I remember exactly, because I was like splattered in them, you know, and he comes in the door and he's wafting the smell of this like coffee shop latte that he'd obviously had. And he's talking about all these exciting meetings and things that he had done that day and projects he's working on. And I just stood there in the kitchen and just tears. I just, you know, like it starts to burn behind your eyes. You feel them coming. And then it just like, I just wept. And the only words I could come out with was, why do you never ask me about me? And why do you not care about what is going on in my heart? And it wasn't until I said the words that I think my brain actually knew what I was experiencing, and that I was alone. I felt alone. I felt I wasn't sought after. I didn't feel like anyone even knew me anymore. And that's where I realized I didn't know me, and I wasn't connected. Like, it had gone so long in just survival mode. I didn't even know how I felt. I didn't know how lonely and dismissed I felt. And so when Josh, and to his credit, I mean, that day he just like held me, like he just hugged me. He didn't say anything. There was really nothing to say. And when he went to see John and came back, and he was like, this is like weird, but I want to ask you, like, can we try this thing? I have this idea. We'll take like 15 minutes and we'll just check in and just ask, like, not because you so often, I think as spouses, I think add on children even more so, we're talking about the details, right? The transactional relationship. Yeah. Versus getting the below that. And that's where emotion lies. And it's connecting left and right sides of the brain. And to actually let you in. But as I'm talking, I'm like letting myself in too, right? I'm connecting with back to me. Who is Christy? Christy's heart. Because we so often, and it's celebrated in our culture, we live numb. We've learned to shut out emotion, and it comes out sideways. And so for that, you know, and that was 15 minutes to actually use emotion language. And we talk about it in the book, but to put a feeling word, and that is not, it can feel clunky at first, and then it becomes so natural. And you start to realize, why, it's not that hard to communicate like this. We just need to start doing it. And it changed. Yeah. We call it 15 minutes saved our marriage, because it did.
I love that. So this is, I don't know, Jesse can decide if he wants to cut this or not. That's just how we live. So Jesse's dad just got a pretty scary cancer diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And he his family, I'm from a pastor's family. My dad, we shut down emotions quickly because we work through that. Like, there's no time for that. I am the, my mom's a pretty big feeler and I'm a really big feeler. I married into a family of zero feelers. They do not feel things. And so we were talking yesterday as we're talking to our kids and, you know, just kind of like, I was out of town when they got the main diagnosis. My father-in-law told my husband. So I'm like learning about this, like in an airport, which is just not the best way to learn about things. But it was, you know, God knows. And so, I come home. I'm like, hey, how are the kids doing? And he's like, I haven't asked them how they're processing this because if I ask them, they will feel things and I can't feel in front of them. And I was like, why? So I'm like digging into him, like, why can't you feel this in front of them? Like what comfort is it going to give to them to see you feel? And so like, just even listening to you guys talk about the emotional part of this, it's, I'm so fascinated by it because it was a conversation we were having just yesterday about like, why? So right. Why is it such an emotional, I wrote like emotional safety. Like how do people who don't have big feelings, cause my kids are like, oh, mom's crying again. And I can explain my feelings very well. Like I have worked through this stuff. So I'm like, well, this is where I'm feeling. And this is how Papa's diagnosis makes me feel. And this is where I'm struggling with the Lord with it. And this is how I will pray. And when I can't pray, then the Holy Spirit's going to pray for me because that's what the Bible says. And so I can explain that pretty well. And Jesse's like, I have to go to the bathroom, like remove, retreat. And so this emotional safety, how do we implement that when we haven't been taught that, because we do become like our parents. And so I see him stuffing feelings and I'm like ripping those band-aids off. So that's a long question to talk about emotional safety. And it's I don't even know if that's,
but it's a great question because
it's a great one and it's not unique,
but it's a great question. Yeah. And I think just for Jesse, like for every, like it starts by asking, what did I learn about emotion growing up? Like what did I experience? And for our parents' generation, emotion was stuff for a lot of our parents' generation. Like it was just, it wasn't talked about. And I would argue today that we've gone to an opposite extreme, that emotions guide how we make decisions. And that's not appropriate either.
Right.
You know, the Bible says that in Proverbs chapter 16, it says, patience is better than power and controlling one's emotions than capturing a city. So it is better to control your emotions than to capture a city. And the reason for that is because if you can't control your emotions, it doesn't matter if you capture the city, you're not gonna be able to keep it. But the reality is this, controlling our emotions, if you are welling up with tears and you're doing everything you can to fight them back, that's not being in control. They're in control of you. So in order to take true control over your feelings, we have to feel them. We have to acknowledge them. We have to identify what they are and then decide what they're teaching us about us or what they're telling us about a situation. And so, you know, I don't fault your husband at all because, I mean, in a lot of cases, this is what he's been taught. This is what we learn. Yeah. And for men too, in particular, and again, I don't want to generalize, I'm generalizing here, but a lot of times when we're afraid of emotion, it's because we want to function and we feel like emotion, if I feel my emotions, I'm not going to function well. But the reality is that might be true in the short term, but it won't be in the long term. And so I even just simply doing the 15 minutes a day with one another to just identify. And we have a children's book called What Am I Feeling? And we have a feelings chart in the back. And I encourage even couples to print off a feelings chart and identify, use emotion language to identify, this is what I'm feeling today. Because when you identify one positive emotion and one negative emotion, it just gives you the ability to go, this is what I'm feeling. And we're not trying to fix it. Right. We're just simply listening. And so often when Chrissy and I get in trouble in our marriage, it's because we haven't been listening to each other. We're trying to fix it. We're trying to take care of the other person. We're trying to take on more than we should. And a lot of times we just say to each other, like, start, like, I just want to be an adult who's allowed to have feelings without you fixing it. Cause we tend to be codependent with each other. We want to fix each other. Yeah. And so it's okay to feel the feeling, then identify it and feel it. And our kids need that permission too. And so that's I think that's the encouragement, is just being able to start there.
I love it.
And I think even as parents, because we often don't like to see emotion in our kids either, right? Because it's intimidating to us. And we have triggers and wounds from our, you know, in our families, maybe anger was, it could either have been really loud in your home or not allowed. Yeah. There's certain feelings that based on how we were brought up will either be, we will shut them down. We might be afraid of them. They might actually make us angry. Like sadness. When I see my daughter in, like, I get angry, and I've had to like lean into the curiosity of why is that? Because there's no, I think we're so afraid of there's like a threat coming. Emotion is given to us by God, and emotional health is just the ability to actually feel the whole range of emotion, but to come in and out of it. And when we historically shut down those emotions or don't allow them, we think we're in control. We're not. Like, that will come out sideways at some point. It's like you're just, it's the pressure. You just keep putting it down. I won't. And then we explode.
And the other piece too is when you shut down negative emotion, you also shut down positive. Mm-hmm. So when you're suppressing, denying, or repressing your negative emotion, you're also doing that to the positive. And eventually you need things, or that honestly, the more you suppress, that's what leads ultimately to addiction. I mean, at the biggest extreme, mm-hmm. because you're trying to feel joy and gladness. You need some, but the pathway to joy and gladness is to experience the life-giving feelings of sadness. And I say life-giving because sadness, grief, fear, anger. Worry, anger, these are all life-giving when you press into them in a relational way rather than trying to turn away from them and isolate yourself from them.
And basically everybody, for sure, what you're saying, like, valid, like, yes. And then everybody needs to go watch the movie Inside Out.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh my gosh. Yep. That's a great one. That movie honestly is genius. I'm still impressed every time I watch that. Like, who wrote this? It is genius.
It's so good. We're actually accepting sadness, and it goes hand in hand.
And the beauty of life, like those little marble ball, you know, that's like, go back to the full circle. That's fullness of life. Like, that's what we're after. Yeah. We want to be able to, with your father-in-law, we want to be able to mourn and grieve and celebrate. But there is no celebration if you cannot grieve. You can't.
Yeah.
Sure. So you have to press in and have to. That sounds really bossy. I'm so sorry.
No, I appreciate it. You know, we're friends.
Everyone,
we're friends here. It's good.
For all of us, like, to just, we can just be curious. Like, be curious. Mm-hmm. The threat of, even, you know, for some people, leaning into the emotions of their kids or their spouse. Like, I don't want to ask the question because, honest to goodness, I don't want to know the answer. Like, I don't want to, I can't handle what's coming back at me. And here's where to, like, take the pressure off. You don't have to handle it, in air quotes. You just need to listen. It's your presence. It's your, like, empathetic listening ear that says, that must be so hard. Like, love you. I see you. And I'm not trying to find an answer for you. That's
so
not
often,
my way to.
That's the way the Lord sits with us in our emotion. Mm. Is he sitting there listening, holding it, and often not even necessarily needing to do anything about it, but just saying, you're loved in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I needed this, and I appreciate you guys so much. So I need to know, as we wrap up today's call, but I do think that we have become good friends, so we'll chat more later.
Yes.
What is it time for in your own lives right now? We believe there's a season for everything under the sun, and a time. So what season or what time are you guys walking in?
Yeah, for me, it's a great question. I'm going to go back to what you said earlier. The time for me has been, I have been finding so much joy being local and building local relationships. I have been off of social media probably more than I should be, especially as we get ready to launch a book. But I have been finding so much life-giving joy. And I think that's where the future is heading, to be honest with you. As families, if you're looking to live a great story as a family, get local, build local, build those life-giving, because everything else is going metaverse. In order to raise great kids, in order to raise great humans that love God and love others, we've got to really be countercultural as parents to build local community, face-to-face, eye contact conversations where we're doing life together. And I've been finding so much more joy in that. It's been so life-giving for me, and that's the season I'm in.
Mm. I remember praying, you know, people like have a word for the year and stuff. Mm. I'm like, Lord, what is this year? And I'm sitting there and I'm just listening, and it felt like it was like, this is the year of you, like meaning me. And I'm like, that feels really selfish. Are we sure? Are we sure that's this what this year is? Yeah. But I felt like this as a mom, and going through seasons where everything has been about others, and everything has been about those that I love. At least in the last week, we just have, you know, we have a 20-month-old and restarted that, you know, season of life. Our other two are older. And so it's just, I think, a year of looking back at me and finding my voice again and finding what brings me alive again. And I've done a lot of that work over the last, you know, decade, even since becoming a mom, but like even more so. And I don't really know what that means. I just came back from a really sweet time with girlfriends. You know, we've been friends for over a decade and went through those horrific, you know, I shouldn't say that makes it, every like new mom is like, this sounds horrible, you know, but those early, you know, pregnancy and early baby years, and you're leaking out of every place in your body. And, you know, we've walked all that together. And now it's like, it's just sweet to just, you know, you're coming into a new season, I think, of you. And so that feels really good.
That's so good. I love that. And I love that you got to go have that time with your friends. Like, that's like sweet time. It's necessary too. Okay. Where can we find you guys? Where can we follow along? The book is out by the time this is airing. I would have it like set to release the same kind of week. So where can we find everything? How can we be your friends online and support you guys?
Yeah. Thank you so much. So famousathome.com is the place that you can go. So anything that you're looking for, famousathome.com. You can also find us on Instagram at famousathome or Josh, our names. Yeah. So famousathome.com, push everything right there. And we're so grateful for you, Jeanette, and just this opportunity to get to even know you more, and can't wait for that to be continued.
Thanks, guys. I really hope that you loved meeting Josh and Christy. I really did. They're just delightful friends, and I love this book. I really do. As I read it and as I ponder these things and really just think about you on the other side of this, I know that I want to be famous in my own home first and foremost, and I want to be known to be a friend to you. But I really want my kids to know that I'm their friend as well. It's this like really sweet, complex thing that we all have to think about. So I really, really love what Josh said about being intentional in our own yards, like being intentional in our own like areas. And so I just want to encourage you to do that. Reach out to your neighbors, reach out to your church, start a small group, join a small group, do whatever you need to do. Live intentionally right around you. I'll see. Be sure to jump over to famousathome.com. And thank Christy and Josh for joining us for coffee. Follow them on social media. Everything's linked in the description below. And I will see you next week when it's time for coffee. Thank you so much for joining us for coffee today. I'm so excited that you made time in your busy schedule to have coffee with me and my guest. If you want to connect on a deeper level, I hope that you will join our email community. The email community is a great way for us just to connect on a little bit deeper level. It's a place for us to email back and forth, to correspond about all things, and I hope that you will join us there. To make sure you never miss an episode, make sure you're following It's Time for Coffee podcast on your favorite podcast player. That way, each week when a new episode comes out, it'll pop right up in your queue and it'll be ready for you to listen to. And if you love today's episode, I would love for you to leave us a rating or review on your favorite player. You can just do that by hitting those stars or commenting about what you love about the episode. It makes my day, and I read every single one of them. And I love hearing how we can meet you right where you're at. So thanks for doing that. And if you haven't already, go do it for me. I would appreciate it. Okay, friend, I'll see you next week when it's time for coffee.